Well, Lent is upon us again. We find ourselves setting off on a path that always begins with wilderness and temptation. If we know the stories of our ancestors, we know that wilderness and temptation take us back to times that are almost prehistoric, to the story of a people wandering in the wilderness for 40 years, when a people who were not yet Israel were tempted to abandon their journey to the promised land, were tempted to follow easier gods who looked a lot like a golden calf. Lent is upon us, and the wonderful people on the worship committee took me up on my suggestion that our theme for this Lent be sticks and stones. This theme lends itself to some interesting artistic expression and a wide possibility for preaching. Today's story of the temptation of Jesus in the wilderness includes the imagery of stones, when the devil tempts Jesus to turn stones into bread to satisfy his hunger. It's understandable that Jesus was hungry after fasting for 40 days and 40 nights, and the bigger picture of hunger was real in Jesus' time as well. A person could go hungry for a variety of reasons. If the late rains in January or February didn't come, that meant there would be a low yield for crops. People who were more physically vulnerable, children and women, were more negatively affected by having less food than they needed. And if people left that ancient social safety net of the village or of their family, and they made their way to the city where they had no connections, they became beggars for even morsels of bread. Studies show that in Jesus' time, men that left the safety of the village for the city, once they arrived in the city, lasted an average of 18 months. Women who did the same, 6 months. Hunger was real. And we know from the gospel stories that Jesus cared about people's well-being and their wholeness, and that he cared about people getting their daily bread. So if you're a compassionate person and you see hungry people, and someone in power offers you an easy way to feed those people, what do? And if you've been living in the wilderness for a few weeks and you're desperately hungry and maybe not in the best mental position to make a good decision, what do? Well, if you're Jesus and the one making the offer is the devil, you say no. To a hungry person, this might seem like a stupid or a mean choice to make. I like to think that Jesus realized that an easy yes would have really complicated consequences, like giving up his own power, like giving in to someone who does not have the good of the people at his heart, like turning your back on God. Jesus' response is rooted in humility and faith. He's humble enough not to grab easy power, and he's faithful enough to trust that God will provide what is needed. Now, I'll admit this story bothers me a little bit, because it makes clear that hard situations are not often resolved by easy answers. And it reminds me a bit of the story of the starfish. I'm sure you know it. Thousands of starfish are washing up on the beach, and a man is walking along the beach and one by one throwing them back into the water. Another man comes along and says, "Why are you bothering to do it? There's no way you can save all these starship. What does it matter?" And the first man replies, "It matters to this one," and he throws another starfish into the sea. I applaud this man's efforts, but I really want another part of the story to be someone looking into why all these starfish are washing up on the shore. I love the fact that this congregation gives tons of food every year to Northeast Emergency Food Program in Mainspring. But I really also want us to be having deep conversations about why there are so many hungry people and what we can do about it. And this week, when on Ash Wednesday, there was another mass shooting in a school, I really want us to be having deep conversations about why these things keep happening and what we can do to stop them. Our thoughts and prayers are a good place to begin. And for any of us who have ever grieved, It is comforting to know that someone is offering support and sympathy and asking God to help us. But let's not be tempted by the idea that our thoughts and prayers are enough and all we need to offer. I think that the issue of mass shootings is complex. I don't think there's a simple answer, and it's not a matter of turning stones into bread. I eavesdropped on a friend's Facebook conversation about this, and I appreciated the nuance of one of the responses. This friend of a friend is a school teacher, and she talked about a student she once had who was a loner, who may or may not have had some undiagnosed mental illness. This student did exhibit some social pathology. This student acted out again and again until he was expelled and then lost. The student had threatened others and had attacked a teacher. And if the student had had access to a gun, who knows what would have happened? Mass shootings do not happen anywhere else in the world the way they happen in the United States. And I think the issue of mass shootings here is complex and nuanced and terrifying. It is a tangled skein of so many different threads of a strange adherence to the Second Amendment, of too easy access to automatic rapid-fire dozens of bullets per minute weapons, of social isolation, of a culture that shares horrific images of violence in our entertainment and at the drop of a hat, of rage, of a black market that sells these weapons, of the inability to have reasoned conversations with each other about this, and for people of faith, of our failure to adhere to an ethic of love and nonviolence. How deep is our sin that after Columbine and Sandy Hook, we did nothing to change the status quo? I know that there are men and women who care about this issue of mass shootings, and they often work on one of those threads in that tangled skein. Some are advocating for different laws. Some are advocating for better access to mental health care. Some live out an ethic of nonviolence in ways that are nothing less than inspiring. And I think the church has a unique opportunity to offer another response to one of these threads. When I read about the perpetrators of these crimes in Parkland, in Orlando, in Las Vegas, in Charleston, in Sandy Hook, in Columbine, and in too many other places, a portrait emerges of a loner, of an angry young man who felt abandoned by his community, who turned to violence. We're the church. Do we know this kid? Do we see this kid? Do we have something to offer him? We can offer him community. We can offer him honesty about his choices and grace to try again. We can offer him space. We can offer him a different narrative. I don't know if that will work, to be really honest. But I do know that social isolation creates a world of hurt. The people in Jesus' day who were most susceptible and vulnerable were those who were socially isolated. The majority of those in the U.S. who kill in mass shootings are the socially isolated. Marry that with an easy access to guns, and the tragedy becomes almost inevitable. The church is a place of community, which doesn't mean we all think alike. This is a place for welcoming those who are like us and those who are not like us. And if we're welcoming only those who are like us, who think like us and look like us and talk like us and believe like us, then we're taking the easy way out and turning stones to bread that will not satisfy us or sustain us or give us life. Recently, one of our wonderful church members said to me that he wished I would tell people what to do more in my sermons. I think he's in the minority. That's usually not my style, but I think I will take him up on his suggestion today. if you are horrified or grieved or furious about the shootings in Florida last week, then please do something. Please do pray for God to give the grieving some measure of comfort, because the amount of comfort that they need can only come from God. And please do pray for us, that we will come to our senses and do the right things that will lessen the chances of one more mass shooting. And please do pray for the shooter, not because you want to, but because Jesus asks us to do that. And Jesus knew something about being the victim of horrible violence. But please don't let praying or posting something on Facebook be the only or the last thing that you do. If you feel our laws are inadequate, advocate for better laws. Bombard your elected officials with letters and emails and phone calls and postcards and tweets. Join advocacy groups like Every Town for Gun Safety or the Sandy Hook Promise. Use the power of your vote. And if you don't know enough about this situation, read up on the statistics of gun violence in the United States. Become informed. Be informed about the trauma that survivors and the families of the victims endure for the rest of their lives. It is excruciating to read their testimonies. But maybe pain will shake us out of our complacency. And if you're a parent with kids in school, I feel your anxiety. It feels like an act of faith to wish them a good day when they leave the door every morning. But if you're a parent, I encourage you to talk to your kids about noticing the loners, about noticing the kids who always get sent to the principal. Talk with them about being brave enough to talk to that kid, and then ask them, if they did that, what happened? And if you're a teacher, God bless you. I know you already care for those kids who struggle to fit in, who struggle with knowing that they are loved and valued and priceless. It's so tempting to play it safe and easy, isn't it? The devil knew that when he came to Jesus. He knew that Jesus was vulnerable after being alone in the wilderness for 40 days and fasting, fending off wild animals, dealing with the elements, wondering what he was doing there. I understand that we feel vulnerable. There is a lot to be afraid of. But taking the easy way out will not lead to good long-term consequences. Staying safe in our own social circles, knowing only people who are like us, shouting at the news without doing anything about it, that's easy. It requires nothing of us but the status quo. And God wants so much more for us than that. In a few minutes, we will baptize two of the newest members of our community. I had the joy of visiting Charlie and Logan when they were only days old, and I will tell you, that is the best part of my job. When we baptize them, you will be asked to promise that you will love them and teach them about Jesus. We will pray that they will know joy and peace throughout their lives. We're making a promise to these little boys today. And by word, and more importantly, by deed, we will show them that God is the one whom we follow. God, and no other person, no other ideal, no other force. How deeply will we live out that promise to these boys, and to all the children who've been baptized in this church, and to all the children of the world? How will we help them learn to say no to their own temptations? What will we do to ensure that they have meaningful, love-filled lives? What will we do to ensure that they have life?